This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Danielle Shaw, Local Government Affairs Manager for Washington Environmental Council, and Sophia Ressler, Staff Attorney for Puget Soundkeeper Alliance. Danielle and Sophia are here to tell us about Nature's Scorecard, which ranks our cities and counties on what they're doing to combat Puget Sound's biggest source of toxic pollution, stormwater. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Remind us why stormwater is a problem. What are the key threats from stormwater?
Stormwater causes flooding. It causes pollution in our communities. It's sad because rain is what makes our community beautiful. But when we develop in a way that doesn't let rain get back into the ground as it should, it creates a problem and it picks up everything we're leaving on the ground. So when it picks up everything we're leaving on the ground and creates a funnel for that water to collect, it creates erosion, it creates flooding, and it harms our fish, our orcas, and us.
And I would just say that stormwater, especially how we see it in the Puget Sound, gets into our streams that are used as salmon spawning habitat, and we have salmon that die in under 3 hours when they go up our urban streams. And then that goes back to our orcas, which feed off of those salmon and causes a whole web of issues.
Which pollutants are of most concern in stormwater?
I would say it depends on your community and what is the pollution that's being left most often on the ground. So petroleum is one of the biggest elements and toxics we find in stormwater. But there's also zinc, there's copper, there's pesticides, there's phosphorus. It just depends on what your community is heavy on.
If you think about it, it's really anything that's getting to hard surfaces that runs off of hard surfaces. So in the city of Seattle, in a place where there's a lot of cars, it is any drips that are coming off cars, any oil, things like that, copper from brake pads, but it can also be things like fertilizer that people are putting on their lawns, the litter that people toss on the street, really anything that gets from the hard surfaces into water bodies that's not supposed to be there.
What does Washington state law require of local jurisdictions in regard to managing stormwater?
So stormwater is regulated on a higher level by the Clean Water Act, which is our federal regulation that requires water bodies to be fishable, swimmable, and drinkable. That manifests here in Washington state and in many states around the country. The Environmental Protection Agency gives permitting power to state agencies. So here in Washington, that's the Department of Ecology. And the Department of Ecology has 5 stormwater general permits. And the one that we looked at mainly was the municipal stormwater permit. So that regulates all of Washington state municipalities and their stormwater runoff.
And what are the specific requirements of the permit?
I would just say that the municipal stormwater permit is a regulatory document that works on how we stop pollution from getting in our waterways. And it does that through an incredibly large variety of mechanisms, one of them being the slow impact development requirement, others being things such as watershed-wide planning between different cities and counties, as well as a variety of other rules and regulations that manage how cities and counties deal with the stormwater that's running off their roads and sidewalks.
Our permit acts as more of a best practices than an end result. There's lots of pieces because it's not just a, have you reduced this much pollution from your water? It's, are you approaching this in a holistic way that takes into account all the sources of stormwater, which is everything we do in our daily lives, so it's pretty comprehensive. There's a lot of pieces of this permit, and Nature Scorecard actually only hits on one specific piece of that permit.
Well, part of what you mentioned is low-impact development. What is low-impact development?
Low-impact development is all about getting back to using our natural resources, nature, to do a lot of the work for us. It is about integrating those natural mechanisms for filtering out pollution, for absorbing a lot of the impact we have into our development. So when we have a site, we don't pave over all the site because you can allow some of that water under and it gets naturally treated.
I would say the big thing that we're touching on with low impact development is infiltration. So when you pave over something, when you pave over nature, you are getting the rainwater just completely running off of that pavement. Whereas low impact development is looking to infiltrate that through whether it be natural vegetation or permeable pavement so that it is no longer reaching the waterways with those pollutants in it.
Yeah, a piece that we should highlight is it's about preserving the systems, not only just the soil, but making sure we're keeping the good plants and the good trees that know how this ecosystem works on the site so that they can do a lot of the heavy lifting for us. I think of trees as stormwater heroes. They do a lot of the work for us.
Well, you've been alluding a bit to this, but what are some examples of green infrastructure and how does green infrastructure help manage stormwater?
I think that we walk around in our communities and don't notice that there is green infrastructure already. So some really good examples in the Seattle area, there's been a big green infrastructure project that just occurred under the Aurora Bridge on the Fremont side. What is obvious about a lot of these projects is that there is oftentimes permeable surfacing, which is noticeable because it tends to be kind of larger grained than other regular concrete and squishy, I guess, a lot of the times, and lots of native vegetation planting. You often see this different kind of drainage systems that are put into the surrounding environment. So an urban system that is taken and made to be more natural is really how we're seeing this in cities around the country.
Sophia and I were just talking about this. Permeable pavement is an example of green infrastructure, and it's also a really great party trick. You can start scouting for it in your community, and when you find it, you can bring your bottle of water out and pour it on that versus hard concrete. And the impact is just, it's so visual. You can tell right away how it functions differently and more effectively. But also to add, green infrastructure is great because it comes in all shapes and sizes, and it means all different things for communities. In Tacoma, there is the Point Defiance Stormwater Park that takes all this pollution from a local neighborhood and funnels it through the systems of troughs and soils, and filters it out, and then shoots it back to Point Defiance. In Kitsap County, down in Manchester, they were trying to revitalize their community, get like an urban center going, and they figured out how to put together a stormwater facility in a central park for that community where they can have concerts, but they can also be treating rainwater runoff. The scale can be tremendous, but it can also just be like a small slice of your lawn, too.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Danielle Shaw, Local Government Affairs Manager for Washington Environmental Council, and Sophia Resslers, Staff Attorney for Puget Sound Keeper Alliance. Our topic is Nature's Scorecard, which ranks our cities and counties on what they are doing to address stormwater. Now tell us about Nature's Scorecard. What is the purpose of the scorecard?
Nature's Scorecard is a tool for communities to either celebrate or activate around a transformational change that their community should be looking at, and that's using low-impact development when you're developing your land and your community. It took one piece of the stormwater permit that all communities are required to abide by in Puget Sound, and it said, let's compare how each of these communities are doing, and let's figure out how to translate this for the folks in that community so they understand what their local governments are doing for them.
We wanted to take something that is really wonky, the idea of this municipal stormwater permit, and make it really accessible for the public. So Nature's Scorecard not only talks about the permit requirement and how communities did with that, but it's also a tool that we're using to try and make people understand why low-impact development is important and how they can encourage their communities to implement and to encourage regulation that allows for low-impact development.
Sophia and I joke about this, but we're both lawyers. We both love doing research, but we don't do this for the sake of doing research. We do this so that we can synthesize a bulk of information that really does impact a community and translate it for those members so that they know what progress is being made and what's not.
So which cities and counties did you evaluate?
We evaluated 81 Puget Sound municipalities. We looked at everything from the documents that they were required to revise based on this permit requirement. We also looked at things like how transparent they were with the public and what kind of public process they went through. We looked at their development codes and their design documents and kind of everything in between to determine whether they had complied with the low impact development portion of this permit. So any municipality that has stormwater that enters the Puget Sound or its tributary, Danielle and I looked at.
This was a requirement that these 81 communities knew about as early as 2012. And their deadline to complete this wasn't until, for most of them, 2016. So a little over a year ago. And you still find that some of them, when they're reporting on how they did, would write a paragraph, whereas others would give 81 pages of detailed notes tracking all the code updates they made. So we're happy that we didn't have to read thousands and thousands of pages, but we're looking for that thorough review.
So as part of the report card, you used some indicators. Would you speak about those?
Yes. So while there was hundreds of updates they could make to their codes to make low-impact developments the preferred and commonly used approach when they're developing land, we picked out five that we thought the community would resonate with them. They'd understand, and they could look for it. The five were softening their footprint. That translates to, do you create a limit for how much you can pave over a plot of land? You want to allow some filtration, some natural ecological services still being involved. Building with care. This is the most sensitive time for land when you're under construction. Are you protecting those soils? Are you not letting them run off when they're so exposed? Are you protecting the native trees, native plants already there? There's lots of elements you could do, but we were looking for robust protections for that vulnerable time during construction.
And then we also looked at improving infiltration. So that was the permeable pavement that Danielle and I like to use as a party trick, and whether communities were encouraging and requiring that in spaces like parking and sidewalks and bike paths was another place that we saw it a lot.
The fourth was growing the right trees. This might seem simple, but it needs to be clear, and the experts are the local government, for what trees are right for that community. What trees actually work with the environment are not only native, but really great at absorbing stormwater. So we were looking for an explicit list, either in their code or referenced by their code, on what were the right trees, what were native trees.
And then the last thing we looked at was maintaining buffers. So buffers you often find along critical areas. They're used to protect things like streams and wetlands. And we wanted to make sure that those buffers were being created out of native vegetation, that the correct plants were being used to actually provide that critical area the protection that it needs.
How did cities and counties in the Puget Sound area do overall in addressing stormwater?
We had some communities that really shined. They went above and beyond. We had what we called 8 green stars, and we went and presented and celebrated and gave them awards saying, we think you really care about the future of your community. We're so proud. But I will say about 50% of the permittees, the local communities we looked at, missed the mark. Some we think just failed in this permit requirement, but others you could tell just didn't take it seriously, didn't see the impact that they really had the potential to make.
So what percentage actually failed in your view?
15% in our view failed. Either they just completely disregarded it, didn't even report on it, didn't even acknowledge it was a permit requirement. Some thought that this permit requirement they could meet by meeting another permit requirement, but we try and be intentional with our laws. If we have two distinct things, we're looking for two distinct ways of meeting those. So when they adopted a stormwater manual, that's great. That's a requirement of their permit, but doesn't mean they met code updates.
Which specific cities or counties stand out as having done a really good job?
Well, Danielle already mentioned that we got to go give out awards at 8 Green Star leader municipalities. Some of the ones that we really appreciated all of their work, and their staff spent an incredible amount of time making these updates and going through all the documents and having these robust public processes. Renton was a really wonderful example of how to redesign your code and your standards in order to implement low impact development in a community. Olympia held 19 public outreach sessions to really get their community members involved in this process and understanding what was going on and how it was going to be implemented in the city of Olympia. So those were some of the really big success stories that we saw.
I got to say, to really demonstrate what this means to us, I had a friend moving to Renton, and she said, I don't know much about this community. I'm nervous. I'm excited. I said, oh, man, I just looked at their codes, and I think you should feel like you made an incredible investment. The code updates they made to really take into account nature and low-impact development, they're going to have a thriving, healthy community for decades to come because of this work. I can only see Renton really growing in a magnificent way because of the work they did in these last few years.
How did Seattle score?
Seattle is a green star as well. There's lots of elements to sustainability, so I want to be clear that this is one specific element, but when they did their code updates, they did this interdepartmentally. This wasn't just your stormwater department. They went across their transportation, their planning departments. They did a robust work, and not only that, Seattle's big enough that its permit requirements kick in a little bit earlier than smaller communities. And because they did this sooner, they actually made an effort to provide insight to other communities that were doing these code updates later on how they did this. Some of the barriers they hit, like how do you get all these departments to coordinate and think through this together? And what were some easy fixes to start looking at to just get the ball rolling? I can't praise them enough for setting the right tone and doing a very comprehensive approach.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Danielle Shaw, Local Government Affairs Manager for Washington Environmental Council, and Sophia Ressler, Staff Attorney for Puget Soundkeeper Alliance. Our topic is Nature's Scorecard, which ranks our cities and counties and what they are doing to address stormwater. In the cities and counties that did particularly well, what kind of underlying political climate or conditions did you find? Was there anything in common that made them be the ones to step forward and do so well?
I think community support, not only from just individual community members, but also from the development community, was one of the big things that we saw that led to city council support. It really helped to get a lot of these codes actually passed through the city council. We've really seen some developers embracing the idea of low-impact development and others not quite willing to go along with this change. And to be fair, this is a big change. What we're trying to do here is a complete paradigm shift for the way that we develop our land. And so there are some developers that are just very much stuck in the ways that they've been doing it for a long time. And we've seen a lot of success where developers are willing to embrace this new way of developing.
And I think there's just a tone in the approach. It's highlighting not only are we just adding regulations, but we think these changes are going to have all these benefits for us. So we're not trying to create something laborious, we're trying to do it better. And I remember looking at a presentation that the city of Olympia, it was their staff giving it to their council to try and explain what they're up to, what they're going to ask of the council to pass. And they did a great job of saying, here are all the great things that happen when we start using a low-impact development approach, when we start using green infrastructure. And I thought, as far as I could tell, that seemed like a very effective way of getting everyone on board.
Which counties or cities were at the bottom of the grading scale in dealing with stormwater?
There were 15% of the counties that we reviewed that didn't quite get this. And I think that really what we saw in all of them were that they didn't leave the amount of time that was required for this process. This was something that took a lot of time. It took staff energy, and it took years for most of the people that did it successfully. So a lot of what we saw in communities that didn't quite understand the permit requirement was that they did it really hastily. They therefore did not inform their public correctly, their development community correctly, so that their code wasn't passed because their council wasn't informed. They just had concerned and angry community members because they didn't understand what was happening or what it would entail of them.
For a lot of those that in our eyes we saw failing, I think they treated this as a just hastily trying to check off a box, when it really should have been approached as this is the foundational work to make the rest of your permit, the rest of your stormwater approach do well.
Has your scorecard motivated any of the laggards?
Yes. We're really proud of Nature's Scorecard because it's created a really wonderful conversation, not just around those that are doing good work and needed some praise, because often they're not praised when they do good work. It goes under the radar too often. But we've had a lot of cities and counties where they're like, why didn't I get all my checks? Where am I on this? Like, I want to do better. You know, I want to demonstrate this commitment. And that means the world to us. That was the goal. So I think we've had dozens of communities reach out and say, hey, would love to learn more about how this process worked on your end, what I could do on my end, presented to a number of communities, councils, and start a lot of one-on-one conversations.
And throughout this entire process, we've been very proactive about being in contact with all of the cities and counties that we graded and that we included on this scorecard. So we've had cities and counties that have taken the approach where they are very transparent with us and have worked with us. For example, the city of Fife, we didn't think they were up to speed on what was required of them, and they got in contact with us and realized that this was something that they needed to take seriously, and our initial letter to them informed them of that, and they worked really proactively with us and with their staff to make sure that they did a sufficient job for this requirement. So I think that there were some municipalities that just got our initial contact and realized what was going to happen if they didn't do this, and really stepped up and did the right thing.
And another piece of this are the people within this community. We wanted them to notice what was happening, and how I see this as a success is we had people tweeting. They saw the scorecard. A woman had just moved to Kitsap County and was so proud that she had just moved to a place that got a green star. I mean, that's what we were truly trying to accomplish.
How do you plan to follow up on the scorecard?
One thing we're doing right now is we are hosting a Facebook Live workshop that'll walk folks through how the scorecard works, how to read it, how to understand where their community landed, and how to take action. If you go to the website, there is templates for how to write a letter or an email or give testimony at a council on how they landed on the scorecard. Really started to foster those conversations between community elected officials and the community members themselves.
Another step that we're taking right now for communities that not necessarily failed, but maybe are lagging behind a little more than we'd like to see, is we're doing some more proactive outreach because we want to give them the opportunity to sit down with us and to understand where we're coming from, and for us to also work with their staff to maybe suggest how they might rewrite their code in order to get some more check marks. What we're hoping for in the next 9 months or so is that we can get a few of the, hopefully a lot of the communities that didn't get all the check marks to actually obtain those check marks and be able to update the scorecard so we have more communities that are checking all of those boxes.
Nature's Scorecard is intended to be a living document. So while the permit requirement had a deadline of, for most communities last year, we are trying to set a line in the sand of here's where you're at as far as progress, and let's see where you can get in a year. Some of those had already met all the check marks, and some of those have a ways to go.
What are the key challenges for implementing more low-impact development and green infrastructure to address stormwater?
I think it's a challenge that we experience with so many others, and it's a new practice. It's a fundamentally different approach than trying to shove all the rain in a pipe and get it out as fast as we can. And that's always going to take a lot of learning, especially for engineers, local government staff that have been working with stormwater in one way for decades. It's a slow process. And it is newer technologies. Permeable pavements, although tested and tried at this point, it's relatively new compared to old forms of concrete. Sophia, you had a great anecdote.
We met with Pierce County last year, and they had this anecdote about how they had done two permeable pavement projects. So taking out the hard surface in order to put in surface that would infiltrate. And they laid them at two completely different times of year. And I don't know if I'm getting these months exactly correct, but one of them was, you know, an 80-degree day in July, and the other was a 35-degree day in November. And they realized that the November pavement had set much harder and was lasting a lot longer and was just holding up much better and required less vacuuming, which is oftentimes what you have to do with permeable because it clogs up. So I think that there's just a really obvious learning process that's going on right now, and people are understanding what the best way to implement some of these requirements are.
This barrier of just transitioning to a new way of life, it just takes time to overcome. And now with things like grant programs at the state that fund big projects like this, they're seeing a challenge and opportunity. And I can't tell you, I've been doing stormwater advocacy for a few years now, and just in those past few years, it's been a huge, huge shift.
Are there any new ideas on the horizon for stormwater control that you'd like to share?
I'm always thinking about retrofits. Retrofits being like the pieces of land we've already did some old methods of stormwater control, and we need to rethink because they're busted or they're old infrastructure. Because that's our biggest problem, especially in urban areas like Seattle. We've sort of paved all that we can. So how do we take those plots of land that we already paved over and fix them? And examples like the Point Defiance Project in Tacoma or the Manchester Park in Kitsap are examples of that. But you're seeing amazing things like in China, the Sponge City. If you haven't seen that, go Google it. And I heard about this incredible project in Atlanta that has some significant flooding issues. They took a park that the community desperately needed, and they made it a stormwater park so that it intentionally floods, like a basketball court intentionally becomes a pond when it rains, and then it goes back to being a basketball court when it's not raining.
I would also just say the importance of community outreach and really having community involvement with this is so vital for people to understand what this does for their community and how it benefits them, and take that to local politics and people that can make these changes. Having that understanding is how this is going to be driven in the right way.
Yeah, we can't say that enough. Green infrastructure, all shapes and sizes, it has to be defined by that community and what they need.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Start walking around your neighborhood and seeing what's going on. Seeing if you see permeable pavement in your sidewalks and your parking lots. Noticing if your native trees are being kept in good shape. If there's a green happening between you and traffic, it's not only treating dirty rain, it's making it more walkable for you, less stressful for you. They have lots of benefits. So just start paying attention to what's happening and really embracing it.
And I would just say we've built in this way that isn't working for us for so long, and it's just time that we embrace this change and figure out a way to build and to develop our land that supports our communities, that supports our ecosystem, and that just really makes our world healthier and better.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane.
You were just listening to Danielle Shaw, Local Government Affairs Manager for Washington Environmental Council, and Sophia Ressler, Staff Attorney for Puget Soundkeeper Alliance. For more information, check on the web at naturesscorecard.com. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.